Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at denverfan.com. Presented by Siltahar Motors. The car buying experience is as easy as call, click, or come in at Siltahar Motors. Get upfront trade value with one call. Research and compare vehicles at sthmotors.com. Or come in and ask for Greg Larson and get $500 off any purchase. Siltahar Motors. Easy to find and conveniently located right off Highway 36 in Wadsworth. Siltahar Motors. Get everything you want out of a dealership.
Welcome to Four Down Territory. As Stink and Mike take a look at the four biggest stories in Denver sports. Here's Schlereth and Evans kicking it off with First Down.
Pure energy.
This will always bring a smile to my face. 100% of the time. I love the people that whine about it, too.
The idea is to always look for the deep ball, anything down the field. We're always looking for those explosive plays. You always want, it's funny, Tyrone Wheatley always tells me, just his whole career, it's throw a go. Just throw a go. I don't care if it's completed or not. It's just going to make it easier for me to run because they're going to be nervous and they're going to have to defend it. So I think a lot of the things we want to do is always down the field.
Yeah, it's not just the threat of Russell Wilson throwing the ball down the field. It's just how good he is at it. And while watching him through the first couple of weeks of camp, try to master or evolve or add to his his game, the short passing game. Mixed results at this point, no doubt about it. But boy, whenever he throws a deep ball, whew,
it's
a constant reminder. Right. This guy might be the best in the game when it comes to throwing the deep ball.
Well, you talk around the league to other coaches and other, you know, GMs and people around the league, they'll all tell you. There's nobody that throws a better deep ball. And the way it turns over is that it just is every time it just seems to turn over perfectly. But that is so typical, though, that running back Tyrone Wheatley says, just keep chucking it deep so it loosens up. Whereas, you know, the real theory is, hey, just keep running the tough yards for us and that'll open up the deep ball, right? That's like, it's funny the perspective people have.
But if you think about how good Russell Wilson is throwing the ball, plus a league where it seems like any pass that's in the air for over 30 yards at a time tends to draw a pass interference call 60% of the time.
I think that's going to be different this year.
We'll see. You what? They're making an emphasis?
Yes.
Is that something you learned at the summit?
Yeah. So what's
the emphasis?
Okay, so here's the emphasis. If there is not, you can have hand fighting. You can both be engaged in hand fighting. You both. As long as you don't alter the route of the receiver. So get this now. Even if you don't look back, remember it used to just be, hey, you didn't look back for the ball?
Right.
That is no longer going to be flagged.
You can face guard.
Well, you don't have to. If you're running down the sideline on a go ball, you're running down the sideline on a go ball and you're connected, you know, if you were touching and you didn't turn your head back to play the ball, that was automatic flag. Yeah. That is no longer a flag.
Well, good. I hope they enforce that.
Right. Now, illegal contact, they've been letting you get away with illegal contact more than 5 yards down the field. So now that's a point of emphasis. So if you're 6 yards, yeah, okay. But if you're 8 yards down the field and you're still contacting that guy, that route, that's going to get flagged. So that's the difference. But the deep ball down the field, theoretically, and this is straight from the NFL, and we had the officials meeting, so we have all these things. These are things that are going to be emphasized this year, and we do it every year. That's one that's going to be emphasized.
I think I speak for all fans. I think that's great.
I do, too.
It's a source of frustration for so many of us. That said, I would test the theory by throwing plenty of balls down the field and dare them not to throw the flag.
Amen, amen, and amen.
Next and four down.
Second down.
Like I told you guys last time I was here, it's very difficult to transition from the same defense that is slightly different, if that makes sense. There's a lot of things that are very, very similar, but there's a lot of things that are called the same but are different. The guys have been giving great energy and great effort and all that stuff, and I'm feeling like we're transitioning to not so much of what we did last year, but what we're doing now, you know, so that's good.
Ejiro Evero, the new defensive coordinator, is... So, do I hear in that correctly that the framework, the foundation of what the Broncos are doing defensively is still very much Vic Fangio oriented?
Yeah, I think the framework is, but then again, every coach has a different set of nuances. So you may call something the same that Vic Fangio called it, but from a nuance standpoint, there's just a boatload of differences, right? Who's got leverage where, how we're taken care of. this route combination, who's picking up the, you know, the through on, and like there's all kinds of different things that you have to think about. So it is, it's the framework is the same, but the nuance is completely different.
Next and four down.
Third down.
I think per conversation with Coach Hackett, that would be the smart thing to do, right? If we boot the ball into the end zone, they take a knee. How can we evaluate some of the younger guys to see if they can contribute at a high level for special teams? Absolutely want to kick the ball. It's no secret. It's not like this is a big secret that we're going to kick the ball and play. We need to evaluate these guys with pads on to see if they're physical. So, yes, we'll kick the ball and play.
Huh. All right, I like that. That's actually, you know what? That makes a whole heck of a lot of sense. That as you go through these preseason games, and if there's not a whole lot you're going to see from your starters, you might as well really use these preseason games to figure out what you got on special teams. And Stooks there is saying, hey, what's the point in just kicking it in the end zone? Let's kick it short of the goal line, and let's have these guys go down, run down, and actually cover. See what they could do.
Mortar kick that thing and make them return it.
And just beat the devil out of
it. Yeah, you know what? The Buffalo Bills need... I hope the Buffalo Bills are watching preseason because they need to figure that out as well.
Too soon? Too soon?
I don't know. I think,
too soon,
listen,
Bills fan?
I think there's no question, Bills fan, that you guys can go and lose at least a couple more Super Bowls.
Next, four down.
One, two, three. Fourth down.
Look at me. I'm the captain now.
End of an era. Yesterday was the last official day the Broncos were owned by the Bolins. A little bittersweet for you.
I think so.
I mean, for all the excitement about new ownership and what it might bring, I do not want to let the moment pass without acknowledging the stewardship of the Bolins and what they were able to turn and build the Broncos into. For all the bickering and fighting at the end, I still thank the Bolins, Pat Bolin, for everything that was done.
Pat Bolin, when you think about the Denver Broncos, he took a team and ended up making them in the 80s one of the jewels on the NFL crown. They're a crown jewel piece.
Yep.
And, like I've said many times, man, I owe him a debt of gratitude. And all the guys that played for him, I think, feel the same way. So debt of gratitude to the Bolin family, who have always been great to us as players, but to me individually, and to Pat Bolin.
Big shoes for the new ownership group to fill, and they will be officially taking over later today. We're at the owners' meeting. They will vote, and I'm sure it'll take about 30 seconds to make that official as the Walton Penner Group, along with the star-studded supporting cast of owners, takes charge later today. In fact, Mike Kliss will join us to tell more about what the whole process will involve. Mike Kliss, our 9 News Bronco insider, joins us next.
Mountain High Appliance presents Training Camp 2022. Ready to ride. Here's Schlereth and Evans.
Mike Kliss is our 9 News Bronco insider, as he is presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook, joins us now. Mike, are you in or on your way to Minneapolis? Are you covering the owners' meetings today in which the Broncos' ownership is going to change hands?
Yep. I'm here outside the hotel where it's all happening. It's actually at the Mall of America, which is Bloomington. But yeah, they anticipating everybody showing up here in about another hour and a half, 2 hours. The NFL owners meeting will be at noon Central time, so 11 o'clock Colorado time. And from what I understand, the meeting will be 45 minutes to an hour. And the Broncos, right about noon, will have new ownership.
Yeah, incredible. The end of an era. And we were just talking about the Bolins and what they have meant to us as players, but what they've meant to this community. From your perspective, having covered this team forever and been a sports writer forever, just what does Pat Bolin, what is his legacy here in Denver, Colorado, in regards to the NFL and the Denver Broncos?
Yeah. And you can tell I'm close to the airport here, but the Pat Bowlen was a Hall of Fame owner. I mean, that's his legacy. You know, when he from 1984 through 2000, and basically he stepped down from day-to-day duties in 2011. I mean, in that period, what I think is the most phenomenal part is there were just as many Super Bowl appearances, five, as losing seasons, which was five. And, you know, I always say, ask the Detroit Lions if that's an impressive stat. Hmm. They then had Super Bowls in 13 and 15, so you could say it was 7-5 at one point. And then, you know, the Alzheimer's just kind of changed things. You know, it created, you know, it was kind of unavoidable, some drama where other people had to speak for him. You know, not only the trustees, but a couple of his relatives spoke for him, and through litigation cases that both of them wound up dismissed. You know, Mr. B wanted, you know, his number one desire was for one of his children to succeed him as controlling owner. And it was moving down the path that Brittany was going to be the one, but the family couldn't get together on that. It had to be unanimous approval, and it just got to be a lot of drama going on with the family. And so the trustees, you know, believed the best thing to do was to sell the team. And I agree with that decision. I think they did need a kind of a clean break here. The Bowlen era was phenomenal. But now let's see what Rob Walton and Greg Penner and, you know, the heirs of Sam Walton, see what they can do with the Broncos.
Mike Liss joining us from Minneapolis, where the owners' meetings will be taking place later today. Broncos ownership will change hands. I'm curious, now that we know some of the supporting owners, limited partner owners that are going to be involved with the Broncos ownership, what will be the roles of Sir Lewis Hamilton, Melanie Hobson, Condoleezza Rice? What will they be doing?
Yeah, that is one of the questions here, whether I do not believe, and I'm assuming here, I don't know for sure, I do not believe they're going to have necessarily voting rights within the partnership. You know, I don't know, board of directors or, you know, I don't think if they're limited partners, and they haven't said exactly how it's structured, they're limited partners, generally limited partners don't have voting rights. I do think that, you know, they will have input, though. You know, I do think when there's major decisions to be made on the stadium, for instance, you know, when to get a new stadium, or do you just upgrade Empower Field for 10 to 15 years? Those will be decisions that I'm sure Condoleezza Rice and Melody Hobson and Sir Lewis Hamilton will be part of, and they'll give their input on what they think.
You know, moving and shifting over to the Broncos as they get ready for this scrimmage. I was talking to Tom Telesco, the Chargers general manager, yesterday. The Cowboys are leaving here, going to Los Angeles. They're going to have 2 days of scrimmages against the Chargers. Any concern, only 1 day of scrimmage against the Cowboys here? Is there a reason for that? Do you have any inside information on why only 1 day versus two, which we've kind of grown accustomed to seeing?
Yeah, I don't know why, but right away it was just a 1 day, and it could be a scheduling type thing. You know, I guess the way Hackett has run the camp, you know, 2 days, that second day always gets feisty. And, you know, the first day, one team or the other tends to dominate the play a little bit. One team kicks the butt of the other. And then the next day, the team that got its butt kicked generally gets its gander up and fights back, and things, you know, get out of hand a little bit. So maybe they wanted to avoid that second day, where tempers flare and those kind of things. And plus back-to-back pad days, you know, that's something Hackett doesn't like. So, you know, that's I didn't dig deep into why there's not a second day, but that's just connecting the dots there on why there wouldn't be.
Finally, Mike, I don't know if in the process of traveling or anything, if you've seen this, but Bears All-Pro linebacker Roquan Smith has requested a trade, unhappy with his contract in Chicago. Is it safe to assume that with the Broncos already showing interest in veteran linebackers last week in Schobert and Barr, that they'll be certainly kicking the tires on Roquan Smith?
Possibly. The difficulty there is the trade. You know, Barr was... And Schobert are free agents who you can get for, you know, a million. I guess Barr signed for $3 million, but there's no compensation there. Roquan, I'm sure the Bears are going to want, you know, he was a first round pick, so they'll want probably a second round. And frankly, the Broncos don't have first or second round picks to trade. In fact, they have none in 2023. So I doubt, I mean, they might want Roquan Smith, but I think it would be very difficult to come up with a compensation package for him.
Okay.
All right.
Mike, we'll be following you all day long. And, of course, people can follow you on Twitter as well as we see the change in the guard and a new era in the Denver Broncos with new ownership becoming official later today. Mike, thank you.
All right, thanks, guys.
Mike Liss, our 9 News Bronco Insider, presented by Bet Rivers. What's trending? That's coming up next.
Here's Schlereth and Evans with What's Trending right now.
All right, here we go.
All right.
Broncos news.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we just got done talking about the ownership. And are you excited about this new ownership group? Or are you... wary.
No.
Hey, I'm going to reserve judgment until you come out and prove something to me. And if so, what do you want to see them prove?
I'm excited just because it puts stability within the organization, deep pockets within the organization, and it's not one of those he said, she said, who's taking over, how long is this going to last, what's the trust doing. There are no more, all those questions right now are gone. Now we just get to sit back and see how it operates. And so far, I mean, obviously they take over today, but so far, I love the direction that the Broncos have been headed in here for the last year.
So your first game of the season's Detroit, right?
That is correct. Philadelphia at Detroit.
So we know Dan Campbell, the head coach, to be famous for the whole eating kneecaps, biting kneecaps.
Yeah,
right?
Biting kneecaps, yep.
So he's got a new motto.
Okay.
He's now talking about how warn the hyenas because the lion pack is coming. So he's saying the hyenas better watch out.
Right. You know, the hyenas. There's a Christopher Walken. I don't know what movie it's from, but where Christopher Walken is like, the lion's got to be the lion. You know? And
that's so, not bad.
Yeah, right? And so anyhow, he's like, you know, the hyenas. He talks about the hyenas are laughing at him and you know, and snickering at him and nipping at him. And he just kind of lays there being the lion. And then all of a sudden, one day he gets up and he roars and he tears them all up and kills every one of them. And because at some point, the lion's got to be the lion. We've been waiting for the lions to be the lions for, what, about 60 years, right? So maybe this is the time they wake up. He's also coined the Stranger Things. You know, I know that's a big Netflix thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
The Stranger Things. But yeah. He's like, win the North. Stranger Things have happened.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he says, quote, we are freaking starving. We are starving. So the hyenas better get out of the way.
Mm.
By the way, of all the impressions that comedians can do,
right?
Man, if you can nail a Christopher Walken, there's just something about somebody who can do Walken that just, I'm immediately in giggle mode.
Right. Yeah.
That
yeah.
wasn't too bad.
Yeah, well, thank
can
you.
Can you do
thank,
can you
well,
do it again?
I don't know that I can do it again. I don't want to ruin the movie. Maybe Johnny, can you clip that for us and let's listen to that back later in the program? Well, yeah. Just clip it for us. See. But we'll see how maybe I can work on my walk.
That was pretty good.
All right, Fever.
College football Rankings are out. The coaches poll is out. No surprise. After a year rebuilding, Alabama.
Year of rebuilding. That's just so wrong.
You know, there are so many coaches out there going, saving you, asshole.
Yeah.
We would love to take winning the SEC and going to the national championship game as a rebuilding year. You should see what it's like on the other side of the street. But do you find it kind of sad that when it comes to college football, we have to get all of our enjoyment and big stories somewhere else? Seriously, when it comes to college football in the state of Colorado, or even up and down the Front Range, has it ever been more a feeling of small time
right
than it is right now?
I'm not a college football aficionado. I am not a college football.
But you view it from afar enough to be dangerous.
No. I've got it on every Saturday. You know, I mean, I love football. Don't get me wrong. But I don't know what it was like here when CU was, you know, competing for national championships. I don't know what the appetite was. But this is such a Broncos town. Like, college football doesn't resonate here. Now you go down in down in the South and college football is king. I mean, it's...
No, I get what you're saying, but... I mean, I've been here now almost 25 years, and I can never recall a time where college football felt as small time as it feels now. Because there were plenty of other years and times where there was genuine enthusiasm about college football and what the teams might be able to do. It just seems like with the changing state of college football that CU, CSU, everyone's being left behind.
Yeah.
Everyone else is going on to bigger and better things,
right.
and everyone here is just being left behind.
I wonder if anybody here just feels like, throw your hands up there. There's nothing you can do because you're never getting into one of the big conferences, right? You're never, like, there's no
right
team
now
in here that will ever get into the Big Ten or the SEC or any of the conferences that, well, it's really the big two conferences, isn't it? Hasn't it just become the big two?
Right, right.
So, anyhow, yeah.
So...
Let me guess. I know who that is. I haven't even looked at the rundown. That's Justin Tucker, isn't it?
No. That is Chance Lytle. Yes. Chance Lytle. He actually is a... graduate student at Duke. He plays football,
mm-hmm.
but he went to the University of Colorado and he got a dual degree in music and voice performance. And you know how everyone in football, you have to get up in front of your teammates and a lot of times sing a song, right?
Yeah.
Or do some sort of performance. This guy got up and sang opera. That's a college football player singing opera right there.
Good for him.
And his teammates were like mesmerized and then went nuts.
Have you heard Justin Tucker, who just signed a big contract, the kicker for the Baltimore Ravens, sing opera?
No.
Dude is he is incredible. He's the best kicker, no offense to Elam or to McManus or to any of the guys who, any of the great. He is hands down the best kicker in the history of the National Football League. And I know Vinatieri hit, the Super Bowl winners and all that stuff. Tucker is on a level all by himself.
But yet another example of what I'm talking about. Here is a chance to have something that would have made CU football really stand out. And they lost this guy. He transferred.
All right.
He went to Duke.
You think because he can sing opera, that would...
it makes him a good football player.
Well, it's not like CU's going to win anything, so at least maybe they can win a singing
contest.
He's
going to Duke!
Guy's smart too.
Yeah, but Duke football.
Oh, well, he's going there to be edumacated.
You can get edumacated at CU.
Well, you can get edumacated anywhere. It just depends on how much edumacation
Mark,
you want.
Can you get edumacated anywhere? You went to Idaho.
You can get edumacated at Idaho.
Can you get edumacated at Idaho?
If you go to class and work.
Can you really?
You can.
Can you really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I got a degree in how do you get by?
How do you get by? What was the secret to Mark Ain through college? Look, if you don't know it by midnight, it's not worth knowing anyway.
That's right.
That'll do it for what is...
And professors like beer.
And professors do like beer. That is what is trending. Coming up, we're playing a game involving the top storylines in Broncos training camp thus far. Give you a chance to play along next.
Loosen up those joints and muscles. It's time for your 7:45 stretch. Here's Schlereth and Evans with the biggest story in Denver sports.
Well, actually, they're big stories. They're storylines, because as we wait for the Broncos to play an actual game, or even just practice with somebody else, we've been going back through over the first couple of weeks of camp and establishing what are the storylines, and how important are these storylines, and so we're playing a little game. Is this storyline a whole milk storyline?
Mm-hmm.
Is this storyline a 2% storyline?
Mm-hmm.
Or is this storyline just pure skim milk?
Right.
Why even bring it up? It's not that big of a deal. All right. Well, let's put this. I'll throw this one at you. How good is this offensive line?
I think that's a whole milk storyline. Simply because I think there are more questions than there are answers at this particular point in time. And let's face it, you've got a quarterback. I mean, history over the last, 11 seasons that he's played, or 9 seasons, whatever it is. I think it's 11 seasons, right? He's a 9-time Pro Bowler. So over the last 11 seasons, he's been sacked more than any other quarterback, I believe. He takes about 45 sacks a year, and, you know, and he's getting older. So that's a big thing. And then you're talking about, man, there are still question marks at the right guard position. There are question marks at the right tackle position. There are question marks, let's face it, center and left guard. I don't think so much. I mean, I think you're pretty set there. I think Dalton Risner is your guy, although there's, I think you're cross-training a few guys. But I think Dalton Risner is no question the guy. Obviously, Bolsey, they paid him. Bolsey is there. And then, Cush. I think Cush is solidified himself clearly as the number one guy. But the whole right side of the offensive line is a question mark. And it hasn't been answered yet. And so, yeah, that is a whole milk. That's a whole milk take. That's a whole milk storyline.
I never thought I'd say this, but we're at a point right now in the evolution of the Broncos offensive line where Bolsey is the most reliable Broncos offensive lineman. True or false?
That's probably true. That is probably true. Which is, it's an amazing story. And, hey, there's nobody that's been more critical of that draft pick and the way he played early. But it's still... And I'll give credit where credit's due. It's one of the most remarkable turnarounds that we've seen. Now, according to NFL GMs and people, quote unquote, in the know, players and GMs, he didn't crack the top, whatever. What was it, 20 offensive tackles in the league right now? So, that year that he had during the COVID year was pretty incredible, but still hasn't necessarily, jumped on the radar of everybody. But some of that comes with, to be fair to Bolsey, some of that comes with the fact that the Broncos haven't been very good.
Sure.
So there's that aspect in there. But it's one of the most remarkable turnarounds, because I promise you, I wouldn't have had patience. Well, shoot, I'm sitting here on the mic and don't have patience. So it's a pretty incredible story.
Okay,
here's in the mud.
Yes, you do.
Yes.
Yeah. Here's another one for you. This storyline. Whole milk, 2% or skim.
Okay.
Will Pat Surtain be the best shutdown corner in the AFC West? Meaning the Broncos have a legitimate weapon who can go out every week, whether it's Keenan Allen.
Right.
Devontae Adams.
Mm-hmm.
Do the Chiefs have receivers?
Oh, yeah. They got a bunch. They got a bunch of receivers.
Uh-huh. They're so cute.
No.
Okay. Who's their best one? Juju?
Juju Smith-Schuster.
All right, let's say Juju.
Nicole Hardman.
All right. So Juju Smith-Schuster, Devontae Adams, Keenan Allen will all be neutralized by PS2.
Well, now, see, this is a big storyline, maybe not even for that reason, because I'm thinking about, like, all right, J.C. Jackson, who was a free agent, went to the Chargers, right? Pretty good player. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
If the guy from the New guy England? From the from New England, right? I'm trying to think of who are the corners on Kansas City. You've got Fenton and a rookie McDuffie is kind of on their depth chart of their starting lineup. So, what about the Raiders? Who do the Raiders have in their secondary?
The Raiders.
They've got Mullen Jr. is one corner. The other quarter is Rock Ya-Sin. So there's no, like...
Nobody there. That jumps out at you.
No, nobody really jumps out at me. Who is the... I think it's whole milk that I think he's the best corner. Like, Jackson's got a lot. He's created turnovers. He's gotten a lot of those things. And he's really good at that, but I don't ever think he's been put in a position to be...
He's operated well within a good defensive framework, good defensive system.
And he's a really good player, but he hasn't been asked to go, okay, you lock down the number one dude. Even back in the day when New England, you know, had the ultimate hired gun in Darrelle Revis, Darrelle would always be on number two, man-to-man, and then they would double-team number one. They were very unique in the way they attack things. It was never like, hey, you take out the number one guy, even though Darrelle could do that.
Right.
And he did that in Tampa, and he did that with the Jets. And
that seems, I know it worked. They won a Super Bowl doing it. But still, wouldn't you think that if you have that, because I know there's been a lot of debate about when you draft a guy like Pat Surtain, you draft a corner that high. Is he ever really going to be able to go out and justify being taken there just by his individual performance?
Sure,
right?
Sure.
So to me, this is a whole milk storyline, because in order to justify where you took him and all the great things that have been said about him, and it's been universal,
right?
The praise that has been showered upon Pat Surtain, to me, that means you go out every week with the understanding this guy's going to neutralize Devontae Adams. This guy's going to neutralize Keenan Allen.
Right.
This guy's going to neutralize whoever is on your schedule and has one of these, you know, top flight receivers. He's going to neutralize him. And then at the end of the day, end of the season, you keep looking up, and every single week, the number one receiver goes up against Pat Surtain, and his stat line looks, you know, something like, you know, three or four catches for 52 yards. Then you can point to it and say, now that's value.
Yeah.
That's how I'm getting my value. Right. That's how I'm measuring my value.
And that's how they used Darrelle Revis with the New York Jets. And there was no question. I mean, he just dominated people. Just flat out dominant. He was the equivalent, because he couldn't run. Well, I shouldn't say he couldn't run. He didn't run like the elite runners in this league. But I've never seen anybody with better feet and better hands. He was a left tackle, an elite level left tackle playing corner. That's the way he played the game. There's so many similarities between the corner position and the tackle position. And that's the way he played the game. He just shut down people before they ever even got. He wouldn't let them off the line of scrimmage. It was like, you're just done. Thank you. It's over. He stopped routes in the first 5 yards. So, and New England used him a little differently. You're 100% right about Pat Surtain. I'll tell you the other thing. You cannot, and this is something that you have to keep in mind. You cannot and should not evaluate Pat Surtain and his season based upon picks.
No, you
can't.
No. I base it just on what I said.
Right.
What are the numbers of the guys he's going up against?
Yeah, exactly. Targets.
Yeah.
How many targets does that guy get? How many catches does he get? How many? Like, that's how you look and you evaluate. And let me just tell you something. If he's up against the guy and the guy gets two targets, like two total targets, three targets, you're talking about a dude where they're coming into the game plan going, hey, man, you know, on Monday when they break down the defense and you've got one of your coaches, your defensive quality control guy going, okay, let's go over this, you know, let's go over this roster. And they get to Pat Surtain and go, hey, don't even test this dude.
Right.
Right. Hey, you know, and they'll all say, hey, we're going to throw at him. We got a couple of plays they're going to try to throw at him. Other than that, they're going to go, it's best to work the opposite side of the field.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and it's amazing when you've got that dude, how you can roll coverage, how you can help other people out.
Are you confident he'll be used that way, by the way, that, hey, there's Devontae Adams. Go. Or will it be, he plays a side, and if that guy ends up lining up on his side, then that's who.
Right. No, I think there'll be a lot more, you know, a lot more opportunity for him to travel.
Yeah.
So, but I think they'll use a great mixture. I think where a lot of that stuff, the whole traveling thing comes into today's NFL. Now, some teams will just do it. Some teams are like, we have so much confidence in our guy. But in critical situations and in red zone situations, that's where you get a guy that's got great hands and great coverage skills. You know you don't have to worry about getting beat over the top, right, because there's not enough end zone in there. That's when you see a lot of teams get into that, you know, four lock, they call whatever, you know, whatever the coverage is where, hey, two lock or whatever we're going to run. We're locking this dude down 1-to-1, and then we're going to go get double teams elsewhere. You know, we're going to double team, you know, the two other stars. We're going to lock one dude and double team two other guys. And essentially somebody that doesn't normally beat you is going to have to beat you. If that makes sense.
Yeah. I just hope that the idea isn't to take a page out of what New England do with Revis. It's like, okay, we're going to put Pat Surtain on, I'm using the Raiders example again, Hunter Renfrow.
Yeah.
And then have two guys on Devontae Adams.
Right. And you may, but Mike, depending on the situation, that may be something you do. That may be say, hey, man, Hunter Renfrow in the red zone on third down and short, he is their go-to. Like, he gets 80% of the targets. So you may say, hey, man, we're going to switch this up.
Yeah.
We're going to play some type of two trail, right? So we're going to jam up Devontae Adams, and you're going to trail him. We're going to have a safety over the top, so we're going to double-team him. And you're going to go over the slot over Hunter Renfrow, and you're going to lock him up man to man. Like, again, those are all game plan things, game plan situations.
Our analysis of Training Camp 2022, Ready to Ride, is presented by Mountain High Appliances.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.